the word dyslexia was kind of being whispered in the hallways or in the teacher's lounge for a lot of my students. So for me, that wasn't a part of what I learned in graduate school. So to hear that word, it was like, well, let me find out a little bit more so that I can be educated on dyslexia. Like, what is this?
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerek Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and Brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from.
Hello, I am so excited. Today we have Jeanette Robert with us. I'm super excited, y'all. We met online, what we say, 2.5, 3 years ago?
Yes, pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic. Jeanette has worked as a speech pathologist, software engineer, and educator. So I'm super excited to have her here with us today. We're going to talk a little bit about everything, but Jeanette's going to talk about dyslexia screenings. We're going to talk about related services because she is a speech and language pathologist. And we're going to talk about assistive technology. We're going to dig a little deep in that area. So Jeanette, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here and to chat with your community that you've cultivated and just chat with you all about what the role of an SLP has and some of the tools and tricks we have up our sleeves for our little dyslexic learners.
Yes, yes. So tell us how you started in this space and in this community, because you yourself have cultivated a community and following. And I didn't mention it, but she's also, I mean, I said she was an author, but I want to just put out there, she's the author of Technical Difficulties, Why Dyslexic Narratives Matter in Tech. And so I'm looking at the copy because I have my copy. And I'm a little bougie, y'all. When folks I feel like I know have a book, I want them to sign it, right? So I'll be like, oh, can I get a copy? But can you mail it to me and sign it? So she was nice enough to do that for me. Yeah.
It is not a problem. I love that you asked. I was like, let me get to it. So as we're talking just a little bit about how I evolved into this role or into this space. So I started my journey as a speech and language pathologist. And there were tons of students on my caseload that did not fit into the cookie cutter mold of having maybe a fluency disorder or having an articulation disorder. And the word dyslexia was kind of being whispered in the hallways or in the teacher's lounge for a lot of my students. So for me, that wasn't a part of what I learned in graduate school. So to hear that word, it was like, well, let me find out a little bit more so that I can be educated on dyslexia. Like, what is this? And so my journey led me to assisting the Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant to sign a bill that required all kindergartners and first graders to be tested for dyslexia. So that was back in 2012. And I'm just really excited to see how my journey unfolded and all of the steps that were taken to get where I am now. So currently, I am working in the intersection of speech and language pathology and technology. So eventually, I moved from Mississippi, where I was working to help create these provisions for dyslexic learners, and I moved to Michigan. So when I moved to the state of Michigan, I wanted an entirely new just occupational endeavor. I was happy about the work that I performed and all of the feats that I made in Mississippi, but I wanted to really start to reinvent or recreate myself because this was a big move for me. So having moved to Michigan, I started to tinker with technology and I finished a coding bootcamp and learned how to program and create websites and apps and things like that. And so I used that knowledge to start advocating for accessibility within the interwebs, so to speak. So I started working with organizations like Microsoft and Google and helping to lay the foundation for those who had language-based learning disorders and create more accessible websites and tools and technology, all in all, that could be expansive for those with dyslexia. So my current work now, I still dibble dabble in dyslexia assessment, as well as in technology. And I am really on a mission to help other SLPs learn about their role as it relates to assessing and diagnosing those with dyslexia.
Yeah, I was telling you before we started recording that SLPs were my favorite, right? Mm-hmm. If I can find an SLP who's also trained in the Orton-Gillingham approach, I'm super excited. My daughter, I think one of her first dyslexia tutors was a speech and language pathologist who was trained. And so awesome. I saw that things that she would tell me and tips that she would give me was a little different than someone who did not have that speech and language background. So I was super excited. I know that's how I connected with you and found you. And I was like, oh, SLP, oh my gosh, yes. And so talk to us about, you mentioned just now assessing dyslexia and how helpful and what do parents need to know about that assessment to then advocate for assistive technology, like bridging the technology based on what the difficulties are or what challenges that their child may face?
Great question. So first things first, if you suspect that your child is struggling to read or to comprehend, I think the very first step is to write a letter, just a handwritten letter to your child's school. And that is going to start that paper trail. Let them know that, hey, I am suspecting a potential disability. I would like my child to get assessed. So once that letter is in the hands of the district leaders and those educational stakeholders, then the timeline is going to begin for an assessment. So when we are assessing an individual for dyslexia, I always like to differentiate the difference between a screener and a full comprehensive evaluation. So screeners are excellent for school-wide administration as they are identifying those who are at risk. But as we know, they are not substitutes for a full comprehensive evaluation. So that screener is going to tell us whether we need to have a further assessment done. They're really quick and they are evidence-based. Most of them are. A couple that I can think of off the top would be the Texas Primary Reading Inventory, the Shaywitz Dyslexia Screener, and even DIBELS, which is the acronym for Dynamic Indicators of Basic Early Literacy Skills. So once that screener has been complete, then that is going to provide us really with the next steps. If dyslexia is suspected beyond having used that evidence-based screener, then we're going to do a full-on assessment. Now, a full-on assessment is going to begin by gauging the family history, because as we know, dyslexia is something that is not only neurologically based, but it's hereditary in a sense. So if your mom or dad struggled with reading, and at that time they didn't get a diagnosis, and now you're here and you're struggling with reading, it's likely that they have not been diagnosed with dyslexia, but they have dyslexia. So once that evaluation process is in place, once we get that family history, then we start doing some further assessment from there. So I know that your audience is mainly going to be parents. And with that in mind, I will say a lot of the testing is not necessarily something that you need to know the exact names for, because it may be outside of, you know, your understanding. You may work as a physician or anesthesiologist or something like that. And so I can give you these test names and things and it just might go over your head. But I think what's really important is to know that once that letter is written and you state that you suspect there is a issue with the way your child is reading or comprehending material, and after that, than the educational diagnostician, the neuropsychologist, or the developmental or behavioral psychologist needs to get involved from the school standpoint, and also that SLP, which is a speech language pathologist.
Oh, that is wonderful. I just recently, I'm always reviewing my daughter's paperwork. And what I realized is that we only had one evaluation. We didn't have multiple assessments that was looking at the different components of reading. And of course, back then I didn't know that, right? I didn't know. We had enough to get her an SLD primary diagnosis, but it really didn't drill down to what was going on with her fluency, her written language. Like, you know, it didn't assess everything that could be going on as a result of dyslexia. And I didn't get that information until we went out and got an independent educational evaluation.
Mm-hmm. So the thing with the independent evaluations, and you may know this yourself from experience, is those waiting lists can be really daunting. And to find someone who's qualified enough to assess your child could certainly make you want to pump the brakes or cause you to be overwhelmed, essentially, because you know, these people are just not really accessible to us every single day. You know, when's the last time you bumped into someone and they told you that they were you know, behavioral pediatrician? You know, like, that's not something that we're seeing on a regular basis. However, it's certainly someone that we need to have in our back pocket as we are looking at getting our children assessed and making sure that they have the proper information as we are getting that paper trail started.
Yep. I said, if I could go back in time, it was because the school, they weren't saying dyslexia, and I thought we needed a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what I didn't know. So I'm like, we're going to go here, we're going to get this evaluation, because then I'll get this diagnosis. And now I know, as long as I can educate parents and tell them what to look for, what to ask for, mm-hmm. and how to dig deeper, that school evaluation would be enough mm-hmm. to get the SLD or dyslexia identification. And now it's up to you, mom, dad, caregiver, to research, to say, okay, this is what's going to help them, and this is how we can have the school help them move forward. But I just didn't know. And the comprehensive evaluation was just so much more meaty and had so much more information. And then I actually had someone explain it to me. As much as I asked the school and as much as they tried, I never understood. I never understood what they were saying to me.
Gotcha. Yeah, it can certainly be painstaking to try to read through all of the documentation and to understand the jargon that's being utilized. Some of those technical terms may throw you for a loop if you have not previously been exposed to these different assessments and these professionals and this team that is going to help you get this diagnosis.
Yeah, I call it teacher talk.
I like that, teacher talk.
And so I'd be like, could you just break that down for me? Like just say it in everyday language. So what technologies would a parent, so now you have a dyslexia identification, and let's say you have a middle schooler and you're like, okay, we need some assistive technology. What types of assistive technology should a parent be aware of? And when? I say middle school, but it could start sooner. What would you recommend?
So when it comes to assistive technology, it is definitely one of those things like trial and error. And I will even say to each his own, because you never know what could potentially be helpful to one student over another student, or one child over another child. So as a definition, assistive technology is any item or piece of equipment, software, or product system that is used to increase, maintain, or improve the functional capabilities of persons with disabilities. So that can be anything from, you know, maybe a buzzer, a timer, a audible, or a slanted surface, or covered overlay, tactile letters, word processor, text-to-speech. I mean, we could go on for days about what is considered assistive technology. I would say to start what could be essential and what I've seen being helpful for a lot of the families I serve is simply that speech to text or that text to speech software. Those are easily accessible via our phones now, and they're everywhere. You know, there's all types of different extensions and apps that we can utilize that will read information to us. So we're cutting out the middleman, and we don't have to also try to comprehend the information, but we can just listen to it being read to us. And the same with, you know, like text or speech to text, rather, when a child can speak into a device and it types or it writes it out for them, then they don't have to deal with trying to make sure that spelling is accurate or that they did this or did that and followed that rule or this particular protocol. So those are always the most common that I see used. But, you know, again, it's all trial and error.
Yeah, yeah. We tried to use a device with that you would use it to highlight the words and then it would read the words. I borrowed it from our Maryland Technology Center. I'll get the right name, you guys. I don't believe it's called Maryland Technology Center, but It is a state agency. And I was able to rent this, like I was renting it from the library, and it was an assistive technology device. But my daughter was in third grade, and with her fine motor skills, I think it's fine motor skills, her writing, using it like a pen to kind of highlight words, it wasn't really working. And then in middle school, she's in sixth grade now, we tried to start it again, but she got frustrated because she was like, oh, I want to use it, and it was dead. And I was in school and I thought I was going to use it, mommy. And then it didn't catch the end of the word. Like, she was a little impatient with how to use the device. But in my mind, and I know a lot of parents probably have this, you long for the day where your dyslexic child is going to pick up a book and want to read it. Now, she will listen to audiobooks all day long. And, you know, we enlist in summer book clubs over the summer. But the thought of her actually having a book in her hand and reading and using that device, I was like, okay, we'll try it again for middle school. But that just didn't work out for us. It just wasn't a good fit for her. But I definitely see her using the features of Google speech to text, especially the speech to text whenever she's doing homework. She'll talk and let it write for her. And now she's learning how to clean it up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's definitely, it depends on the child and what they actually need help with.
Yeah, I would certainly say that anything from potentially an electronic organizer to even touchscreen devices, pencil grips, post-it notes. I mean, all of these things are considered as assistive technology. And once you have a diagnosis, you'll have this in place as an accommodation, or you can speak with the educator that is spearheading this assessment to see if they will be able to add those as accommodations, because accommodations will certainly allow our children to have that playing field level for them as they are matriculating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Jeanette, talk to us about, because I read your book and I'm always telling folks, like, the four main careers for dyslexics are entrepreneurship, the arts, engineering, and architect. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was reading in the book about, like, embracing differences, like, don't diss me. And talk to us about that, because we do touch on, and since season one of the podcast, we've actually been helping a lot of adults and folks who have adults, like you said, who weren't diagnosed, but now they have a child and the child has dyslexia and they've gotten a diagnosis and they're like, oh my gosh, that's me. I struggled the same way in school. And so some of them are revealing that they're struggling in the workplace, right? And, or they've decided, like, this comes natural for me. Like, this is easy for me to do. And I've been working in something that totally goes against what I'm good at, right? And so talk to us a little bit about dyslexia and tech and that tech space and what dyslexics bring to that industry.
So we've all heard that dyslexics are out of the box thinkers. So with that in mind, and also with characteristics like pattern interpreting, spatial reasoning, and episodic memory, dyslexics bring quite a bit to the tech workforce. And so I touch bases on that in my book. Thank you for plugging my book for me. But I talk about some of the research that I've seen around how dyslexics are very enterprising and they're very innovative because they're not thinking pragmatically. They're thinking more conceptually. They have these out of the box. Again, I use that phrase, out of the box frames of reference. And when you are in the tech space, we are looking for ways in which we can create more efficient products and products that are more user-friendly and that essentially are more accessible to everyone. And dyslexics, with that episodic memory and that pattern interpreting and that spatial reasoning, they're able to help us, and when I say us, I mean individuals who work in tech, they help us to really create products that are essential for everyone. And it's all about having that dyslexic voice at the table, because as we're creating these different prototypes and these different tools to exist in our world, it's important that we have people that are at the table with different frames of reference and different thought processes so they can help curate and cooperate with the development of these different tools. So for instance, if you are online and you're on a website and it's really, really easy for you to read, but it's because that's the field you work in. And so you're skimming through it quickly, but then someone who is not in that field and they come and look at the website and they're completely confused. It's things like that that we want to start thinking about as we are going through our everyday lifestyles and just understanding whose voice is loudest and whose voice is lowest. You know, understanding that when dyslexics are working with us side by side in tech, they're helping us to create products that would not exist with conventional thinking. So my book goes deeply in depth with more insight as I cite sources and I talk about different research that exists that mirrors what I'm telling you. But I would say having dyslexic individuals at the table with us will make our table more equitable. It will make it more varied. It will make it more diverse. And obviously it will be a more inclusive table that we'll all be able to benefit from.
Yes, 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 absolutely. And it's so ironic because as you were speaking, I kept thinking in the workspace, as we become adults and we're working, the dyslexic brain and how folks think it's positive. It's a benefit to the organization. Meanwhile, when they're in K-12, all of the instruction is geared towards those who don't need assistance, right? I think about the curriculums for reading. Most of them are for kiddos who are gonna learn to read regardless. Then you have mm-hmm. that segment, that population of students who need to be taught, right? And then you have that next component of folks who are dyslexic that really need intensive therapy, if you will. But then as we grow, right? And then the goal is to be sufficient in college, career, and life. You go out there in the workspace mm-hmm. and now, finally, after struggling through K-12, now embrace me. Mm-hmm. It's just funny how the world works in that way. Now embrace me because now you see all of what I bring. Yeah, that's amazing to look at it, that perspective there. But that's very interesting to know that yet there is another field where dyslexics can thrive. Yes. I've always said that folks who have learning disabilities that go undiagnosed suffer mm-hmm. with self-esteem. So oftentimes they are underemployed. And the jobs that are easy entry work against their learning disability. And it makes it harder and it sends the anxiety up.
That's a great point. And I often think about the fact that people who have disabilities that go undiagnosed, they are really, really creative because they've learned to slip in between those cracks and not be noticed. So they're the ones who have all of those cool hacks and acronyms to help them remember things. And you're like, man, goodness. So it could go twofold. It could be, I can say it is an obvious detriment to not have that label so you can get those accommodations. But the benefit, which is very slim, but it's the fact that that trauma has helped you to create all types of hacks and tools, mental tools to alleviate the understanding of certain things.
Yeah, they're the hardest workers, right? Mm-hmm. They're the hardest mm-hmm. workers. And I tell parents all the time who are new to the space, who will get frustrated with their child, you know, and I'm like, be patient, like, you know, give them grace, because it takes you no time to read a statement or a paragraph, but that child is using 10 times the brain power to read that same statement, you know, or passage. I was talking to a parent and I'm like, don't give that child homework. Like, don't beat her up because she's not finishing her homework. I'm like, if she's in school and she's not even getting the remediation that she really needs, your baby is working super hard in school. Mm-hmm. She comes home, she's mentally exhausted. I know you don't see it, but give her some grace. You know, close that book. Research shows that homework doesn't, that's another topic for another day. But, you know, I'm just saying, give the child grace, because they have been working hard all day. And every dyslexic will tell you, do not call me lazy and tell me that I don't work hard. I work very hard because I have to. And so that is absolutely the case for dyslexics who don't get diagnosed. They come up with coping strategies. And sometimes those coping strategies make it a little harder, but they get through. They get through. Well, Jeanette, this has been wonderful. I mean, I just so appreciate you joining us. So give us one nugget that you would leave. And we've touched on the professional space. So either a parent or someone who is aspiring to be, you know, a speech and language pathologist, or mm-hmm. someone in the workplace. You just pick just one nugget that you would like to leave them with so that they can elevate their knowledge and skills and be able to really help and make an impact in this space.
I would say that literacy is a civil and human rights issue because it impacts our life outcomes. So make sure that you are on the right side of just legislation so that you can help advocate for better equality across the board as it relates to literacy, learning, language, and everything in between.
Oh, that is wonderful. That make sure you're on the right side. Well, guys, I told you we were going to continue to bring you great content and great guests. So I am delighted that Jeanette could join us today. So stay tuned as we bring you more wonderful content, all things Black and dyslexic.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.